Welcome to Sounding Off with Kim Munson, our podcast. Be sure and check out my website. That is Kim Munson, MUNSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. That's where we send out initially these podcasts and our op-eds, and you'll get a first look at all the guests for the next week. And go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. Thrilled to have in studio with me Steve Peck, Stephen Peck. He is a former director on the Douglas County School Board. He served in the U.S. Navy as in the Medical Service Corps. And you're a millennial.
I am. A traitor to my generation.
Traitor, yes. To your generation. Actually, I think there's a lot of millennials that are a traitor to their generation. But we had a discussion,
yes,
early on through Governor Polis's masking mandates and all. And he hadn't really gotten quite to that point. It was early on during the whole COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption. We've come a long way, or maybe not come a long way. We've disintegrated a long way, in my opinion, regarding masks. But you've got an interesting perspective. You're going to make the case for masks and then not, huh?
Well, yeah, that's right. Now, I thank you for having me on the show. It's an incredible view you have here, looking out over the city. When we spoke in April, I had written an opinion piece that was published in Colorado Politics that called for a protest on the 19th down at the Capitol. And basically, it was the case that the stay-at-home order was disproportionate to the health threat, the public health threat. And this was heavy-handed and wildly inappropriate, that it was going to cause all sorts of unintended consequences, some of which I did not foresee. Obviously, mm-hmm. I don't think anybody did, but some of which were certainly forecastable, and some of which I think the consequences are still going to be brought out. But I didn't want to just come out and say, hey, I'm opposed to this stay-at-home order without offering solutions. And so I said, you know, as I was thinking about this problem, I thought, what would be a productive response to this? And one of them is that, okay, if we had masking, that would probably help. And we didn't have a ton of evidence at the time, obviously, mm-hmm. in Eastern Asia, where the population densities are significantly higher, that's fairly common in their culture. But that's new here in, mm-hmm. in the U.S. I also talked about taking temperatures outside of businesses. And then you reached out to me.
And yeah, that was a early on discussion on this whole thing. And I was so concerned about the freedom issue of this, and that many times, you know, safety and freedom kind of collide.
Yes. Yes, they do. That's right. And so the case for masking is this, and this is the most persuasive case that I've come across. I am personally persuaded by this case, but ultimately I am opposed to masking, and I think the reasons against masking are stronger than the reasons for masking. And I think ultimately the hinge on what you just said, that between safety and freedom, freedom is ultimately so much more important than safety. And like Benjamin Franklin said, you know, those who sacrifice safety for freedom end up with neither. And so we're playing a very dangerous game. We have built century upon century, idea upon idea, war upon war to enjoy the freedoms that we have today. And we're willing to just wash those all away just because there's this infinitesimally small risk that you could contract coronavirus. I mean, it's really sad to see society as docile and as malleable as it is, but that's where we're at. That's where we're at.
Well, that is where we're at. And just before you came in to record this podcast, we had the really sad news that Herman Cain passed on, and one of the headlines said it was because of coronavirus. We know that he had contracted that, and he was really an amazing voice for a great Black voice, a great Black Republican conservative voice.
Capitalist.
And it's going to be interesting what the media does with this now, Steve Peck.
Will it be interesting? We know what they're going to say. We know what they'll say. They'll say, I don't know if he was a corona denier. It's not as if my guess is that most people that are opposed to things like masking or the shutdown orders don't deny that the disease exists. Of course it exists. The question is, what's a reasonable response to this threat?
Right.
Is it reasonable to totally bubble wrap ourselves and turn all of society into a gigantic pretzel to accommodate this very small, very small risk. So can I make the case for masking before
we take okay, the make case the case. Again. And you said that this has convinced you. So let's hear this, Stephen Peck.
Well, it has to some extent, at least. So the case is this. Basically, masking is not a binary, like, on or off switch. Either you get it or you don't, right? Somebody, and I actually have a colleague, they're very diligent, very observant of all the rules, and they still ultimately ended up getting the mask. So people like myself
got COVID or got the mask?
Oh, I'm sorry, ended up contracting COVID.
Okay.
Despite adhering to all these rules, and was very careful to social distance and only went out when he absolutely needed to. And so people would be inclined to say, obviously, masks don't work. This is ineffective. And there are, I think, a case to make as far as, like, what type of mask we're talking about. Do you have facial hair? Are they wearing it appropriately, et cetera, et cetera. But it's, I think, the more accurate comparison would be to think about a dimmer switch where there's a spectrum of exposure that you can get to a disease. So if somebody sneezes right next to you, your likelihood of contracting the disease is obviously higher. The virus is obviously higher. And I'm talking broadly, not just about COVID, about the cold or the flu or anything. Right. Mm-hmm. And if you have a high degree of exposure, your chances of having that sickness longer in duration and deeper in severity is higher. If you have minimal exposure or only glancing exposure, then you have an increased likelihood of a shorter duration and less severe symptoms. So we can have a debate about which mask is the ideal mask, and there's certainly been a lot about that. But that to me is compelling.
So you're saying that a mask, if somebody sneezes next to you, you know, that's going to kind of dim the exposure to cold, coronavirus, flu, whatever.
Well, yes, I've been persuaded that that's true. But I don't think it outweighs the cons here, which is deeply unsettling. It's really unsettling that so many people, the government, the state has really pulled off an incredible thing, because to get people to not do something is one thing, but to get them to do something, a thing that they don't want to do, that's different. And that's even more difficult. But look around.
Well, but how do they do that, Stephen Peck? There's two things. You know, socialism, we talk about this all the time on the show. Socialism ultimately comes down to force. Or the other thing that we see is fear. So it's freedom versus force, force versus freedom, and freedom versus fear, fear versus freedom. And those in the media, the pundits, the politicians, the interested parties, they have used fear to scare people to death. Now, I'm very concerned with Herman Cain's death. This is going to be something that's really going to spun to create even more fear within people.
It certainly will. I've always been a Herman Cain fan.
Me too.
And I'm
sad.
Sad and disappointed. Obviously, he's not going to be the only one or the last one, and that's not to minimize his passing, because he's such an integral figure in politics over the last 15 years. His run for president was inspiring, and I was inspired by it. I wanted
too.
To see him win. I really did. I liked his gumption. I liked his moxie. He was an incredible guy. And you're absolutely right. He will be pilloried. Now it'll be interesting to know, how was this categorized? Because, of course, there's a big debate around, you know, did he have other underlying conditions? People that have CKD, chronic kidney disease, ESRD, end-stage renal disease, people that with COPD, or any kind of respiratory illnesses, this is a dangerous thing. What troubles me is how we've inverted the whole conversation from quarantining those that are at risk to quarantining
everybody. Yeah.
How does that make sense?
And Stephen, what this has done, so you served on Douglas County School Board, so you have a real care for kids in their education. I am talking to parents that are so concerned about their children. I mean, no sports, no school, no friends, no job, couldn't go to the park initially. It's cruel.
It is cruel. But like you said, you will be shamed in submission. You will be coerced and you will comply, right? That's kind of the message. I mean, I've got three young kids and it's interesting. On our block here in Hounds Ranch, the kids all play together. And there's another family at the other end of the block. They've let their kids play outside. And all these kids are under 10, right? Mm-hmm. And they go run wild. The only rule in our house is you can't go in somebody else's house. So you can just own the block. Mm-hmm. And they do. And we've never put restrictions on them about distancing or masking. And this has been since the very beginning, since March, since April, when we didn't know as much. Mm-hmm. And some of the kids would be waving from their living room window
and they wanted to come outside.
They did, yeah. And you know, I had comments for the kids like, I'm, you know, that's sad that their parents are paralyzed by the fear. Mm-hmm. I mean, the statistics show, and statistics matter so much.
They do.
And I understand that I've had my share of statistics I'm not a statistician. I struggled in those classes, but I guess I probably know more than the average person. The statistics show this is not the threat that it's made out to be. We've had approximately, and I just want to be very clear about the language here. According to the searches I did last night, 45,000 Coloradans out of 5.9 million Coloradans, 45,000 have contracted the disease, but only about 1,800 have passed from the disease. That's 0.00003% of the population have passed from this. But we've turned the whole school system upside down, and businesses are going out of business. The kids can't have normal summers. I sent my kids away for weeks at a time to their grandparents, where they've been able to
play.
Yes, to have
be
a
kids.
Normal, right.
And speaking of that, you know, Governor Polis, I think he has really good handlers, because I think he says things that people want to hear, but the actual policies are draconian. Sure. And in fact, I think it was Westward that had found a Wallet Hub report that they'd done, and out of 51 states in the District of Columbia regarding how restrictive they are, Colorado was number two.
Really?
Yes.
I mean, I'm not surprised to hear. I guess I'm surprised, not surprised. Governor Polis, I respect as a shrewd politician.
Mm-hmm.
He has his eyes in the White House long term, and he wants to tell a story that he was a successful congressman, then he was a successful governor of a purple state. He's obviously can bankroll his own campaign. He wants to be the first gay president. Mm-hmm. I think he and Newsom are the face of the future face of the party. And as far as left-wing politicians go, he gives the appearance of being reasonable. But,
right.
But
look at the policies.
And he'll say, what did he say? These
well, wear your damn mask.
Well, wear your damn mask. But there was something about you're selfish bastards.
Yeah.
Right? If you don't comply, you're a selfish bastard. So they're trying to shame. This is textbook stuff.
It is.
It's so.
Well, early on, you know, and the propaganda signs now that are, you know, over the, they used to be, it was going to let us know about the traffic up. They're like 1984 propaganda signs. And so the sign would say, stay home, save a life.
Oh, yeah.
So that means if you're not staying home, you want to kill somebody? I mean, it's like textbook stuff.
It is. And of course, when the narrative changed, they all changed their social media profiles like trained SEALs. And they are now saying, well, you got to wear masks now. Yeah. So if you're really so terrified, if this is the threat that you believe that it is, stay home. Stay home. Save a life. Save your life, maybe. The hypocrisy is so rank and so egregious. And there's so many examples. I mean, to me, I think one of the most compelling cases against this is that there were all this energy around having the reopen people just stay at home, stay at home, stay at home. But then when a neo-Marxist group like BLM or Antifa all of a sudden have their protests, then we've got a letter signed by over 1,000 healthcare workers and medical students and professors, lawyers, of course. They're all saying, well, you know, we have to make an exception here. I actually printed something off here. This is from Reason Magazine.
Okay.
It says, facing a slew of media requests asked about how protests might be at risk for COVID-19 transmission, a group of infectious diseases experts at the University of Washington, with input from other colleagues, drafted a collective response in an open letter published Sunday. This is going back a little bit. They write that protests against systemic racism, which fosters the disproportionate burden of COVID-19 on Black communities and also perpetuates police violence, must be supported. And that was signed by over 1,000 epidemiologists, doctors, social workers, medical students, and other. I mean, so this
doublespeak, talking out of both sides of your mouth.
Speak is what it is.
Yeah.
Now, you would, you know, if you've read Orwell, you know what doublespeak is. Unfortunately, I don't know if that's assigned reading in our high schools anymore. side note, I give my nieces and nephews copies of Atlas Shrugged and 1984 for graduation presents with a couple $100. And hopefully that's money well invested in the future.
So now do you put the money in the book so that they have to find it someplace while they're reading it?
No, I don't do that. But I'll say this will rock your world and hopefully, you know, inspire them to read it. Do you remember the mayor of Washington, D.C., I forget her name now, but she came out and said, listen, we're going to implement this universal mask ban. Except for there were
mask mandate, right?
Thank you. Thank you for clarifying that. Yes, that masks were required in the district, except for politicians, judges, and federal workers. Now, of course, that comprises just about everybody in the district.
In Washington, D.C.
I guess unless you're making sandwiches or coffee or delivering packages. Uh-huh. Those are for little people, though. And it is Orwellian. You know, all animals are equal. Some animals are more equal than others.
Uh-huh.
And why don't we see this universal masking in other countries? Because it's a fraud. It is a total fraud. It's about virtue signaling and emitting a message that there is panic in the air. And there's not panic in the air. There shouldn't be.
So, Stephen, when we first talked about this back in April, I was so concerned because I saw this as a form of submission. And Marxism, two things. They take away the individual and they take away private property. And you see that happening here. The little people, as you mentioned, the corporations have done just fine, or many of them have done just fine because they have the lawyers, they have the accountants, they have the lobbyists to affect government. Who is really getting hurt with this shutdown here in Colorado or this, you know, Governor Polis says we're open. We're not open. You know, we're open with certain caveats, if you will.
Right.
You know, you can't have a drink after 10:01, you know.
It's asinine. I just get so angry. I'm not an angry person, but it really drives me crazy. I start to like go cross-eyed.
But it's a form of submission.
Yes.
And then and you can't see people smile. I mean, that's a great way that people connect.
Yes.
Is smile. It takes it away from us. And that's what I see so insidious about this. So let's continue on with your process to get to a point of freedom.
Again, my initial suggestion was, let's be reasonable. This is better than the stay-at-home order, which I still think it is. But we're talking about moving Overton's window at this point, and I want to move it as far as possible. So the goalposts have changed. We need to change the goalposts. The initial pretext for this whole thing was there was a wave coming, 2.2
flatten the curve.
Flatten the curve. We're going to overwhelm the hospitals. And that was convincing until it didn't happen, until we knew that. I mean, again, I wrote that piece in mid-April with some risk attached to it. Uh-huh. Unfortunately, or unfortunately, I was right, I guess, depending upon how you see it. This has been the biggest. Yes, there's a real threat. Yes, there's a real disease. People like Herman Cain have passed away. But our reaction is insane. And if you think about what happened in China in 1949, and again in 1966, this was obviously more developed at this point in their revolution. They were solidly in the communist camp by that point, but they had taken the landlord's land and had basically seized and confiscated
They took their land.
Yes. And then they put signs around people, put dunce caps on them, shamed them. They shamed people.
Kind of like the whole mask thing.
Well, yeah. So when I walk around, there's some discomfort, but honestly, honestly, I feel like I'm the one that's representing what ought to be. And it's, you know, I'm not trying to like stick it in the eye of any one person or, mm-hmm. you know, they want to frame the debate mm-hmm. around like, well, you're a selfish bastard or mm-hmm. you're a jerk. You're just a jerk. Mm-hmm. No, I'm not a jerk. You have the right to your own opinions. What you don't have the right to is attach something to my face against my, if I'm not bought into that, this is deeply personal. How did we get to the point where people are just going along with this?
Well, what's really insidious on this, though, Stephen Peck, is I've read the most recent, well, I actually read all of Governor Polis's executive orders. And so instead of, what it basically does is it says to the businesses, if you don't enforce this thing that we are saying, then we're going to take your license. And as you and I know, that's their livelihoods. Mm-hmm. And so that's what's difficult is I wear a mask as minimally as possible, but I don't want these businesses to not be in business. I mean, it's like, how do we stand against this, Stephen Peck?
Right, right. Well, I think you have conversations like this. You challenge the conventional wisdom politely, firmly, effectively, again and again and again. I think it's also important for people to see other people out there. I don't think most people want to wear the mask.
I don't think
if you ask them, if somebody confronts you, I mean, one of the things you can say is, why are you wearing yours? Now, if they're an employee, I get that. But mm-hmm. If you're confronted by another shopper, mm-hmm. which I have never been, in the last few days, I was at a Walgreens. No one confronted me. I did get one lady that looked like she was going to, and I basically gave her the eyes that said, I dare you. I dare you. She didn't say anything. I went into a bank, actually, for the first time in about 10 years. The lady
You said, are a millennial.
Yeah, I know. Well, USAA is all online. So I went into this bank and without a mask, and she said, how did she phrase it? She said something like, do you mind if I get you a mask? And I said, yes, I do mind. Thank you. And the look on her face, I don't think she gets that very often. The look on her face was shock. It was, I don't know how to respond. She ushered me over and I carried out my business. And I've got some quotes here from George Brockler, our district attorney. Okay. This is not an enforceable this law. Executive order carries the weight of law, but it's not enforceable. And the governor said as much. Mm-hmm. So I think the way you combat it is you challenge it, not in a obstinate or ugly way, but as a one based in free inquiry and genuine concern about what it could represent. Like, let's just take away the immediate, if we can, like remove ourselves from this day and time from this specific issue, just in general, the state's ability to
fill in the blank.
Yes.
Just fill in the blank.
It should be alarming. It should be alarming. And as I've thought about it more and more and people's reaction to it, the conclusion I've come to is life is very good. We have our positions in the community, we've got our jobs, we have our families, our houses, our 401ks to protect. There's a lot to lose mm-hmm. by kind of going out there and challenging the conventional wisdom. It's a lot easier to just do what they say, which is, oh, it's just a piece of mask.
Yeah.
I'm sorry you're so inconvenienced. It's not about being inconvenienced. No.
It is, and to that point, it just continues on, fill in the blank, do this so that you can, and ultimately, what you just described, our way of life, our 401ks, our homes, will be taken from us.
Ultimately.
If we continue down this road.
Absolutely, absolutely. People that say, well, this is a conversation with a friend, and we were having a conversation along these lines. He's politically active to the extent that he votes and that he's informed mm-hmm. mostly. He said, Steve, this is America. That couldn't happen here, could it? And I said,
oh, yeah.
Yes, it could. Why are we unique? And in fact, I think we're at actually a higher risk because we have this hubris behind us that says we're the United States. Uh-huh. We're the land of the free and the home of the brave. Well, maybe our parents were, or their parents were. Today, we're the land of the docile and easily compelled. I mean,
yep. You know, Steve, I know, thank you for your service in the Navy. I've interviewed on my America's Veterans Stories over probably now 140 World War II veterans. And I'm thinking about it, those guys that were storming the beaches at, you know, Omaha Beach or Okinawa, Iwo Jima, you know, any of these battles. And they would be embarrassed at our lack of being brave. And so it is our time. We have to have these conversations, engage in the battle of ideas, because once we start down this road, this has been percolating.
Yes, it has.
Underneath, and it's been being taught in our education system. So that's why these things are so important. And so I think you and I both see the risk to the home of the brave and the land of the free. You know?
When I see people ask, where do the rioters and anarchists, like, where did they learn to hate? To me, it's obvious, but it's not obvious apparently to all. It's coming from your neighborhood public school. And if you think it's just the university system, it's not. You're wrong. This bleeds all the way down into middle school, and sometimes even before
down
that.
To elementary school.
And what I hear is, well, not my neighborhood school, or you don't know my homeroom teacher. And it's unbelievable. It doesn't matter how many times you say that the calls are coming from inside the house. It's like they still don't get it. Still don't get it. So that's why I'm a fierce proponent of homeschooling, public charters, like
school choice.
School choice, right, exactly. There's lots of great alternatives. Obviously, private school, if you can afford it. Microschooling is going to be a thing this fall. And parents, honestly, I think the teacher unions, who are obviously calling for staying at home and having these adjusted work schedules that are impossible, I think they're really not playing their cards right. They're so certain that they've got everybody by the short hair that I think they're going to find out. Look, what if you had 10 or 15% of parents who say, I'm looking for another alternative? Do you know what that would do to per pupil funding?
I actually think that that's going to happen. I do want to say there are really great public school teachers as well that have a great love for our students. But the teachers union, and if you go to Open Secrets, heavyhitters.com, they are, com or org, I can't remember. But the teachers unions, two teachers unions, have been in the top 10 since like 1984, no pun intended, of giving money to the Democrat Party. And it's like hundreds of millions of dollars. That's money that could go to our kids. So yeah, that's really important. Stephen Peck, we're just about out of time. So wrap this up regarding the masking.
Well, it's hard to pick any one thing to end on. I guess I did want to get to some of the words that George Brockler, our district attorney, said about the executive orders. Can we end on that?
Let's do that.
Do you want
That'd
me to end with my own comments?
Both. Let's do both. So George and then your comments.
So George wrote, let's be clear, that the governor cannot expand on the existing crime of trespassing. He may be making suggestions, but they carry no legal weight whatsoever. Any private business owner always had the ability to refuse the service to patrons under certain circumstances. You know, we've all heard of no shirt, no shoes, no service, but this is no different than that. You just add mask, no shirt, no shoes, no service, said Brockler. The governor's words should either carry the force of law or they shouldn't be called an order. They should be called guidance or recommendations. Now, I do want to point out, and this kind of opens up, I know we're trying to end things here, but if you think about the question about the Mr. Phillips and the master
Jack
cake,
Phillips. Mm-hmm.
Jack Phillips and the masterpiece cake legal cases, the patrons were coming in making demands of the business owners. Now the script has been inverted again because this is political. It's not actually about the facts. It's not actually about the cake. There's a much larger narrative here. In this case, the business owner has the right to say, get out. Mm-hmm. I don't want to serve you. I just want to point that out. And when our 18th Judicial District Attorney is saying it should be called guidance or recommendations, I think the listeners should listen to that and say, listen, I'm in a grocery store looking at all these people. They probably don't want to be wearing masks either. At some point, this is a hall of mirrors reflecting off from each other. If people finally would just say, listen, I'm not going to, I'm willing to say, I'm not going to wear it for personal reasons.
And we should be able to do that. I think we need to do another podcast regarding kind of the property rights of the owner. You mentioned Jack Phillips. I really think that that business people should be able to choose who they serve, who they don't. Now, I know that this was steeped back in, you know, the civil rights laws, but it was laws that were put in place that said that you can't serve somebody if they are a certain color. Now we have a ordinance in place that says you can't serve somebody if they don't do X.
Yeah, and I actually agree with you. So if you own a cake shop and you want everybody to mask, do they have the right to say, listen, this is the rules of the road here in this store, and if you don't have a mask, I have reserved the right to ask you to leave.
But then maybe there might be a cake shop down the way that isn't requiring that, and so I might go to that cake shop.
I think I'll see you there.
Okay, sounds good. Stephen Peck, this has been fascinating. So what's the final thought you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Stand up, fight back, and chin up, shoulders back.
Okay. Thanks so much, Stephen Peck. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.